Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is actor, director, and educator Cynthia Henderson. Henderson is a graduate of Pennsylvania State University, where she received an MFA in acting. She is currently an associate professor in the Department of Theater Arts at Ithaca College in Ithaca, New York. Since 1985, she has also been a professional actor and has performed on stage and in film and television in the U.S., Europe, and Africa. In 2007, she founded Performing Arts for Social Change, which is now a strategic initiative of the Center for Transformative Action at Cornell University. Henderson is a member of Actors Equity and is also a Fulbright Scholar. And welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Now, your interest and commitment in social justice issues could have taken you in almost any direction. Mm-hmm. So why did you choose theater and performing arts?
Well, I guess I've always been doing that. And normally I would say to people that I started doing it when I was living in New York City, and I did some work with the Urban League and some inner city youths and a gang. But actually, it goes further back than that. When I really gave it some thought, it actually goes back to when I was a child. My younger brother, he was brain damaged from a fall. I grew up in Alabama, in Mobile, where the houses are built very high up because of flooding.
Wow.
And he fell off of a porch, and it caused brain damage. And he was put into special ed classes, and this was the 70s, so, you know, they didn't really do a lot with these kids back then. And I was getting frustrated because I just felt like, he's smarter than that. So we started playing school. I would be the teacher, he would be the student. And I would teach him a lot of the things I was learning, and then we'd reverse roles, and he would be the teacher, and I would be the student, and he'd have to teach me how to do these things.
So you felt like this was a performance in some way.
It was. Uh-huh. You know, at the time, I just was playing with my younger brother, but also teaching him some stuff that I felt like he would be able to learn, which he did. He absorbed things wonderfully.
Wow, what a wonderful beginning.
Yeah, so that's actually where my Performing Arts for Social Change or Theater for Social Change started.
Uh-huh.
But then I really got into it when I was living in New York City, and I did a project with the Urban League, storytelling with some elementary school students in an underfunded school, and we would do stories. They would act out, and it would give them this sense of accomplishment with people out there watching them. And it was just children's stories like The Three Little Pigs and things like that.
But it takes kids out of themselves so that they can feel actually in some ways more comfortable.
Exactly.
Well, tell me if there's a particular play or a particular theater performance that you saw as an adult that made you realize how powerful theater can be in regard to social issues.
There are quite a few. Angels in America. I saw that, and it really just got me thinking about how we treat one another in the society.
And also how we interpret history is
exactly
what I found from that play,
I was going to say also, you know, the historical aspects surrounding that, politics. I actually did a presentation in Greece back in 2004 about theater in politics. And in the case of Angels in America, it was politics being portrayed in theater.
Uh-huh.
So Radio Golf, another play about politics and theater. It was telling in that it was about a young African-American politician in the inner city who went on to greater things and sounds like our president a little bit.
Yeah.
It wasn't about him, but
no, of course.
It reminds me of that.
I know. I mean, almost all plays I can think of are political in some ways, because the personal, as they say, is political.
Exactly.
So even Edward Albee's plays about relationships.
Yeah, exactly. It holds a mirror up to society and makes us look at ourselves.
Uh-huh.
You know, even something like Les Mis.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Absolutely,
the human condition, it makes us look at ourselves.
Yeah.
I'd probably say, though, the moment that I realized how strongly it can affect our lives was actually in 2001 after September 11th. My son and I were here, and we have friends and family in New York City, though. Mm-hmm. And a friend of ours worked in the World Trade Center.
Yeah.
And we were very worried about him. And about 10 days after the attack, we went down there just to check in on everyone, make sure everybody was okay. Because, of course, you remember during that time, phones, you couldn't
horrible.
Get through.
Oh, it was horrible.
And we were in the subway going under the Wall Street District, and it was eerily quiet, like a ghost town. and we came up and we saw the site before it was boarded up. And my son was in tears, and this horrible photographer was trying to take pictures of him, and I made him stop. But we were both very shaken, and so we left. And as we're leaving, I'm trying to think of something we can do. Maybe I should take him to the zoo, maybe. And I thought, I'm going to take him to see Blue Man. So we went down, got off the train. I just bought the tickets right then and there. I was like, whatever, it's going to cost me an arm and a leg, whatever. And we went in and we sat down, and I just watched all of that wash away from my son as these funny little men in blue paint took the entire audience away from it for just a moment.
Yeah, so it can be a break, a spiritual break.
It can be a spiritual break as well. So it can hold a mirror up to us. It can challenge us. It can make us think. And sometimes it can just take us away for a moment when we really need to be taken away.
Yeah, I understand that.
So that's why I use theater.
I do want to talk about, you had been teaching for a good number of years when you when you founded the Performing Arts for Social Change in 2007. Mm-hmm. What prompted it? What were you not able to accomplish just in the theater arts department and putting on the plays of your choice?
I had been doing this type of work on my own, out of pocket, for years. And one of my students, Amanda LaForge, she was assisting me on a project. She's a very organized young lady. She's a stage manager. She's quite organized.
She must be, yes.
Yes. And she said, well, Cynthia, maybe we can get some funding for this. I was like, oh, I'd never really thought about that. So she and I started working out ways to get grant monies to do the work that I was doing, and then she started helping me, and then another student came in and started volunteering to help, and then some outside community members came in and started working on projects with me. And at the time, I was a member of the board of directors for the Center for Transformative Action, and I mentioned some of the work that we were doing. And because I was on the board, I couldn't be a project partner because that would be a conflict of interest. But Anka Wesso thought, you know, this would probably be a really good strategic initiative under the Center for Transformative Action, and then people can write the grants, because I was uncomfortable having grant monies written to me.
Oh, I understand,
That was very uncomfortable for me. So oftentimes I would just say, oh, never mind. So she suggested that I write up a proposal, and I presented it to the center. I sat out of those meetings, of course. And they decided to bring it on as a strategic initiative, and grants are now written. The monies go through Center for Transformative Action.
Tell us what the center is actually doing. Are you getting original works done?
Yes.
Is this specifically original works, and are they always political or social?
It's almost always original works. I think the only time I've ever done a scripted piece was a piece called Dying to be Thin with an organization. It was about people dealing with eating disorders.
That was Joan Jacob Sprumberg's thing, was it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember that.
So that was just an in-house production. It wasn't made public. It was used as a working tool. But other than that, we always base the plays on the actual stories of the community members, whomever it is that brings us in. I have a way of working where we take these stories and we turn them into monologues, we turn them into vignettes, scenes, and we piece it all together as a cohesive play. The one I just did was with Lehman Alternative Community School, and that was Ruminations, dealing with students and their friends and family who are trying to navigate and work within a world that is created for and by the abled body, and how these students deal with it, and how their loved ones help them work through these challenges.
How they navigate a world that was not really set up for them in some
ways.
Wow, how interesting.
It was really quite wonderful. I think over 400 people saw that, because the Hangar Theater graciously allowed us to do a performance for the entire school and their family members at the Hangar Theater, and then we did a performance at the Lehman Alternative Community School's Black Box Theater, which was open to the general public.
So you're tapping something in the community where people are able to express themselves and share their stories at the same time.
Exactly.
Wow, that's really interesting. How much guidance do you have to give them? Because these are not professional writers,
No, they're not professional writers. They're not professional actors. Every now and again, I'll bring in actors. The project I did with the Racker Center, we brought in actors to portray those stories because of confidentiality reasons. But I usually am the director for these. I'm trying to train people up so that it's not always me going in and doing the actual projects. But right now, it's primarily I go in and do the projects. Every now and again, I'll get a student that I've worked with before who is a senior directing major, and she'll direct it. But in terms of guiding them through the stories, it's a process that I use in class, and that's how I get the stories out of them. And we write them up as monologues, and then we take some of those monologues and we piece them together into scenes. Sometimes I'll bring in a BA drama major. Well, they're not BA drama majors, BA theater studies major from Ithaca College, who is interested in playwriting. And I've brought in a few of them who have helped take those stories and piece them together cohesively into a
nice
play.
Are you working with college students writing these, or are these young kids in the community, high school students? Who's doing these?
If it's a high school, it's the students who are coming up with these plays, and they write them. They write the raw material. Then the college student or myself will sit down with them and pull it all together into a play.
I see. Wow, what a great collaboration.
Mm-hmm. And then we rehearse it and stage it, and if they want to do a public performance, we make it a public performance.
Wow.
If they want to keep it in-house and use it more as a learning moment, that's what we do. And for each of the public performances, we like to have a talk back so that there can be an exchange of ideas. With Voice Suspended, which was dealing with the racial unrest in the Ithaca City School District, we had a wonderful talk back that involved Principal Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
And it was wonderful because some of the students said that the first time they'd actually gotten to talk to him was after that performance.
Wow.
We didn't do it at the high school.
Mm-hmm.
We did it in the community and at Ithaca College. And at that time, the Kitchen Theater graciously allowed us to perform in their space. So I've had some really wonderful cooperation with the local professional theater companies, too.
What a way to communicate people's stories and even issues that people are afraid to talk about.
But
if you put it in what you consider fiction form, which is plays, people are more comfortable, I would assume.
And when we take the work into the prison system, I did that for about 3 years. We take it into the prison system. That's all kept in-house. And we filmed for the prisoners and one of the residents. That's what they call them because they're youth offenders. When he was released, I saw him at a grocery store, and he said that project was key in him being released early.
Wow, so it changes people's lives. Of course it changes people's lives. Well, I'm not surprised to hear that.
I've been very pleased about that.
Yeah. I do want to ask you, too, about the fact that you teach acting. Mm-hmm. Do you teach any particular techniques, like Stanislavski or some of them?
Well, everything is Stanislavski.
Everything is, okay.
Everything in modern theater is Stanislavski. Any modern method, anybody who says it doesn't come out of Stanislavski.
So he's the root.
He's the root.
Okay.
And Chekhov. I would say Chekhov would be the root of Stanislavski, and Stanislavski would be the root of
Tell us what the philosophy is, though. I mean,
I primarily teach the Meisner method. But I also add in things that I've picked up. I teach what I learn. I am very interested in physics. And I've worked with a physicist and come up with some really wonderful observation exercises based on physics that I bring into the classroom, philosophy, religion, Taoist concepts. And I bring it all together in this wonderful little mishmash. I talk about it in my book, The Actor's Landscape. And I'm writing another book right now. I'm collaborating with a student, actually, because we want to speak with two voices in this book, from the student perspective and the teacher's perspective, basically taking someone through a year in the classroom with us.
Wow, how interesting.
So I'm working with two students. The first student I worked with was BFA musical theater major Will Boyajian. He just graduated. And my assistant this year is another musical theater major, and his name is Michael Kushner. No relation to Tony Kushner.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Professor Cynthia Henderson. She's a professor of theater arts at Ithaca College and also the founder of Performing Arts for Social Change. Now, I want to ask you, what's the key for being a good actor? Can you name a few?
Truth.
Really? Truth is part of it?
Speak your truth.
But how do people arrive at that through all the little layers of self-consciousness, fear?
Those are the things that we work through in the studio. You have to understand yourself. I have a theory. It's The Actor's Landscape, which is what the book is called.
Uh-huh.
And this theory comes from an erroneous assumption that went in science for years about how much of our brain we use. Where they say you only use 10% of your brain.
Yes, we've all heard that.
And it's an error, but that's okay, it's stuck. And the way I see it, and this is not based in science, it's just my instinct and just from observing people, we use maybe about 5% of our full psychological and emotional range. And what we are inside.
Oh, so I was thinking you were going to say it's erroneous on the other side that we use much more than they say. You think less, huh?
No, this is not the brain. This is about our psychological and emotional landscape.
Okay.
Because through social conditioning, we've been told, you know, girls are this way, boys are this way, boys don't cry. You know, all of these things we've learned in society, regardless of what our culture is, has cut us off. Whereas I'd say up until about the age of 6, we had full use of everything.
Access.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
And access to everything inside of us. And then through social conditioning and some synapses firing the wrong way, mm-hmm. we've cut ourselves off, cut off access. So what we do in the studio is we relearn.
How to be a child.
How to be a child and how to access everything that we are capable of. Because we are capable of being horrible, like Genghis Khan, you know?
Absolutely, yeah.
To being absolutely the most wonderful, gracious human being on the planet, like some would say Mother Teresa, maybe, mm-hmm. a Mother Teresa type mm-hmm. person, mm-hmm. and everything in between. But I'm not going to encourage you to go out and be Genghis Khan, but you should know how to access it so that you can play. If you have to play,
you know, this would be good for just socially to train people to be themselves
in some ways
and not be afraid of some of those aspects of themselves.
And that's a little bit of what we do in some of the mm-hmm. projects. I mean, depending on the length of time I have with these projects.
That's really interesting. So people have to get in touch with their demons as well as their angels.
Exactly.
And not be afraid of either one in some
and
ways.
And don't judge them.
Yeah.
It's all about being amoral. We don't judge the character. We find their truths, and their truths are often already inside of us.
Yeah. Oh, that's really fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. I also want to talk about the fact that you're an actor, and, mm-hmm. and you've acted in films, TV, theater, everything.
Yeah.
Have you found, as an African-American woman, that you've been cast in stereotypes all the time? Has that changed? How has that landscape
Not
changed?
All the time. I've had my moments. There have been some interesting, and I'm the maid, why? You know,
exactly.
moments.
No,
and,
we've
you
all
know,
heard these
or
stories,
I'm
yes.
I'm the junkie, why?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I've played lawyers mm-hmm. and doctors.
So you feel like things have changed in many ways in the 20 years or so that you've been in the business?
Somewhat. I think it still can change more to the point where it's not we're hiring the black chick to be the lawyer. So it can be we're just hiring this woman to be the lawyer.
Yeah, because she's a good actress.
Because she's good in this role.
Yeah, exactly.
Not because we want a colorblind cast or because we want to make a statement, but we're just casting her because she's good uh-huh. and that's what we want. Or with the family a long time ago, and I will not name the network. I was cast to do a pilot in a show where I played the mom, and we had the kids, and da-da-da-da-da, and all of this stuff was going on, and it was a great show, and we were very excited about it. Then it was nixed, and the next time I saw it, it was an all-white cast.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And it didn't last a whole season.
Yay.
So.
that is, you know, I mean, I have often heard playwrights say that they don't want their plays to be switched. You know,
yeah.
Edward Albee got really angry when they wanted to make Martha and George and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf into a gay couple.
Yeah.
So plays, I mean, it seems to me African-American actors and actresses don't have that many opportunities still in Hollywood, especially.
Yeah. Unless it's written where anyone can play it.
Yes.
Latino, African American, uh-huh. Native American, Asian,
yeah.
Martian, anyone.
They've already put too many Martians in film.
Oh, yeah, there is that.
No, I want to ask you this, too. How do you see your role as a director? Is it always collaborative, or do you let the actors have a lot of freedom, or are you a dictator? To tell us how you approach that.
Well, I like to think that I am a collaborator.
Every director says that.
Exactly. I think I am. I've been told that I am, and I've had people tell me that it's been a wonderful experience. I think sometimes people are a little surprised because I tend to kind of present myself as, you know, pretty free-spirited person,
laid-back
person,
yeah.
And then they're a little surprised that, wait a minute, she has a vision and she knows where she wants this thing to go, wait a minute. But at the same time, and I do, I have a vision, I know where I want the play to go, but I'm also open to other thoughts because I've had my mind changed for the better many times.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean,
really
if you trust the people that you cast,
yeah.
It's obviously
and
a creative process.
And also to my
process.
Dramaturg, to my light uh-huh. designer, my uh-huh. scenic designer. I even talk to my stage manager because he or she is looking at it with a different set of eyes, and I'll say, hey, Tori, what's reading here? You know, is that reading to you? And it doesn't quite make sense. Okay, that didn't make sense to my stage manager.
Ah, there you go. Uh-huh.
So let me rethink this, you know, or my actors will come to me. I had this great idea. Okay, let's give it a shot. Let's try it. Uh-huh. If we have the time, if we don't, then I have
it's your vision, yeah.
I have to go ahead and do what I need to do because of time. But when we do have the time, I really do like to hear where they're coming from.
Uh-huh. No, that makes sense to me.
I think it makes the play better.
Do you think the fact that you have been an actor and a voiceover artist and all these things mm-hmm. has helped you as a director?
I think so.
Yeah.
I do approach directing from an actor standpoint oftentimes because I know what it's like. On that end,
uh-huh.
I'm not a designer, so I really watch my designers and listen to them so that I get a sense of where they're coming from, because I'm not a designer. That is not my art.
But I bet your gut could tell you if it looks wrong for the whole picture.
Well, it does. And, you know, I've been blessed with people who also, like, believe in true collaboration
uh-huh.
so that...
Uh-huh.
If they're really wanting, you know, I remember when I did the Colored Museum, and it was a great set designer. He really wanted everything to be white and pristine, and I was like, no, it's the 80s, and it's gritty, and it's got to have an industrial feel. So we found this great compromise. And when
that's
the
great.
Show
that's
went
like
up,
somebody painting something.
And, yeah,
yeah,
and when the show went up, you know, after opening night, he came up to me and we really butted heads because he's brilliant,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I really knew what I wanted to do too. And it came together so beautifully. And we gave each other a big old hug.
So you do collaborate, Cynthia, but it's always, you get the final say, right?
Well, yeah.
Of course.
Buck stop here.
Of course.
You know.
Of course. Now, do you like exploring new ways of expressing ideas and issues in theater? I mean, I've heard about hip hop opera and
mm-hmm.
have you tried transferring straight plays into different mediums like that?
I don't like doing that.
Okay, that was my question.
Yeah.
Really, why is that? Do you think it distracts?
It takes something away from what... Because it's not just a collaboration with myself, the actors, and the designers, and other technicians. It's a collaboration with the playwright.
And the audience, in some ways.
And the audience, yeah, ultimately. Because you can't have theater without an audience.
Right, right.
It's just an installation and nobody comes to see it. But because the playwright isn't always there, I don't like...
So you think these are gimmicks, a lot of these things, and shticks?
Sometimes. Sometimes I think they come from very true, organic expressions of what the director mm-hmm. wants to do. Mm-hmm. So I don't dismiss it. It's just something I don't prefer.
Yeah. Because there was an article in the New York Times about how opera, somebody's got to do something about opera. It's become stagnant. The same old shows are being done, the same old performances.
And you know what?
People get mad when you modernize it, though, you know?
But somebody's going to do something, and they're not going to do it to The Marriage of Figaro. They're going to write a new opera.
There you go, like the Harvey Milk opera.
Exactly.
They wrote it was a fascinating
opera,
too.
They're going to write
probably
a new
only
opera.
About six of us saw it.
Leave The Marriage of Figaro alone. It is mm-hmm. one of my son's favorite operas. Leave it alone.
Yeah.
But you want to write a new opera and do something avant-garde and daring? Oh, yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
So you believe in traditions to leave the traditional stuff.
To a point.
Yeah.
Like, I really did dig Cat on a Hot Tin Roof with the all-black cast.
Oh, yes.
I dug that. That was awesome. Come on, who's the cast, though?
Yeah, you know, who was that?
I can't... James Earl Jones, Felicia Rashad.
Oh, my God.
Please.
Yeah, I remember hearing about it. I bet Tennessee Williams would have loved it.
Jesus.
I just bet he would have. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was beautiful. I'm good with that, but Carmen the hip-hopera? Leave Carmen alone.
Yeah, how about Madame Butterfly as a stoned woman who's... never mind.
Exactly. No.
I know what you mean.
So that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to switch it up a little bit, someone kind of cross-cast some of the genders for one of the Shakespeare plays.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about
cool
that.
With that.
Yeah, that sounds kind of interesting.
It was very interesting. It was interesting. They didn't they didn't change the language. They didn't add a laser light show in space costumes. You know, so I was good.
Yeah,
you know,
I understand that. I mean, you can take it to a certain extent.
Yeah.
We only have a couple minutes left. I really wanted to ask you this, too.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of scientists and artists have talked about mistakes or surprises that happen while they're creating something. Has that ever happened to you while you're doing a play and you thought it was a mistake, but it turned out to be this magic moment? Tell us really quickly.
I think it was during Burn This, because I was adding a dance in. Because we talk about this dancer, the play talks about this dancer, but you never see her dance. And I was watching the young lady dance, and I was like, this is beautiful. She was just kind of twirling around during a rehearsal. You know, it was during a break, and she was just doing her thing, and I'm watching her. And I said, the audience needs to see this creative process, not just her finished product. So I had her pulling her dance together during the show. I thought it was beautiful.
But some people thought it was a mistake.
There was a critic who thought, you know, the play went on too long because I added stuff like that in there. But I also felt like it gave a stronger sense of how these people live day to day. And I decided to have them just sort of living their lives throughout the play, even during intermission.
Wow, how interesting.
They just lived their lives. The one character packed his bag and left.
Well, Cynthia Henderson, we are almost out of time. Can you tell us a little bit about what's coming up and what they might be able to see you in?
Absolutely. I am going to be doing No Child by Nalaja Sun at the Green Star Space with the Reader's Theater. We have a public performance that starts on September 26th, and it actually opens on the 28th and runs for 3 days. And my boyfriend, Felipe Rivera, and I have a little company, FNC Dance and Fitness. That's Ithaca-Zumba.com. And we have been collaborating with the Finger Lakes Wine Center on the first Friday of each month with Gallery Night. And September 7th, we'll be having wine tastings and social dance at the Finger Lakes Wine Center starting at 8 o'clock.
That's great. Well, Cynthia Henderson, thank you so much for joining us. And good luck with the Performing Arts for Social Change. We'll look forward to performances in the future.
Thank you so much.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.